This is the voice of Turkey. This is the voice of Turkey.
This is the voice of Turkey's English language transmission broadcasting from Ankara in the 16-meter band between 12:30 and 13:30 UTC on 17,620 kHz to Europe. You can listen to us over the Turksat 3A and 4A satellites and on the internet at www.trtdinle.com through radios link and under the voice of Turkey radios expandable section. Our email address is englishdesk@trt.net.tr. Following the news and review of the Turkish press, the Voice of Turkey will present you with That's Why, followed by weekly commentary and Turkey's geomarked products. First, the headlines. Finance Minister Şimşek to attend IMF World Bank spring meetings. Armenian Prime Minister avoids using the term genocide when referring to 1915 incidents. Hamas official on conditions of Israeli withdrawal from Gaza. And IDF Chief of Staff Halevi says Israel will respond to Iran missile attack. And now the news. Turkey's Minister of Treasury and Finance, Mehmet Şimşek, has traveled to the United States to participate in spring meetings of the International Monetary Fund, IMF, and the World Bank, as well as the G20 Finance Ministers and Central Bank Governors meeting, where he will engage with international investors. The spring meetings, organized annually by the IMF and the World Bank, addressing global economic issues and opportunities, have begun. Amid growing concerns about inflation and geopolitical tensions, the meetings are set to take place in the capital city of the United States, Washington, until April the 20th. Representing Turkey at these meetings, Minister Şimşek embarked on his journey to the United States. On Wednesday, he's expected to attend the Global Outlook Forum organized by the Institute of International Finance. Additionally, on Thursday, the Turkish top finance official is scheduled to speak at an event titled Turkey Moving Forward in a Volatile Global Economy and participate in the G20 Finance Ministers and Central Bank Governors meeting. During these programs, Finance Minister Şimşek will also have the opportunity to meet with representatives of credit rating agencies, finance ministers from various countries, central bank officials, members of the private sector and civil society organizations, as well as academics. The meetings will provide a platform for engaging with numerous foreign investors. Armenian Prime Minister Nikol Pashinyan sparked controversy in Armenia after using the terms great crime and massacre when referring to the incidents in 1915. Prime Minister Pashinyan published on his personal Facebook account an address titled The Social Psychology of the Republic of Armenia, which was drafted for the political school of his ruling party, the Civil Contract. Pashinyan, who argued that the forced migration of Armenians to Iran by Shah Abbas of Iran in the early 17th century had profound effects on the social psychology of the Armenians, also touching on the events of 1915. Instead of using the term genocide for the events of 1915, Pashinyan said great crime meets Yergan and massacre. Pashinyan's remarks, which quickly drew criticism among the opposition, became a discussion topic of across the country. He has not yet responded to criticisms. In a written statement, Izzeti Al-Rishek, a member of the political bureau of the Hamas movement, said there is no compromise given for a complete withdrawal of Israel from Gaza and the free return of displaced people. Al-Rishek made assessments regarding Hamas's position on a ceasefire and a prisoner exchange agreement. He said there is no compromise on the complete withdrawal of the occupation from Gaza and the free return of the displaced to their areas in the Gaza Strip. Emphasizing the importance of a permanent ceasefire in Gaza, Al-Rishek continued, "The only guarantee to stop the bloodshed flowing like a waterfall and massacres is a permanent ceasefire. The occupiers want a temporary ceasefire agreement so that they can release their prisoners in Gaza and then resume their genocide and war in the Gaza Strip." Al-Rishek drew attention to the fact that the occupying forces had not achieved any victory in Gaza for more than 6 months, emphasizing that the targeting of civilians and images showing the current state of life in the city were signs of defeat, not victory. Commenting on the global perception of Israel, Al-Rishek noted, "Israel is now in an undesirable situation. The international community is on the side of our people and their just cause." Since the attacks by Israel in the Gaza Strip began on October the 7th, nearly 34,000 civilians, mostly children, have lost their lives.
The news continues on the English language broadcast of The Voice of Turkey.
Israel Chief of Staff Herzi Halevi has vowed to respond to Iranian airstrikes against his country. Israel State Television Kan 11 announced that a limited attack on Iran is being planned, which will allow it to control the situation, which it cannot respond to and which will not drag the region into a full-scale war. Noting that Gaza would not be relegated to a subordinate position as a result of the escalation of tensions with Iran, the broadcast said that officials were of the view that the red line had crossed because Iran carried out a direct attack from its territory for the first time, and that a response was imperative. The broadcast stated that assassination operations in Iran or a large-scale cyber attack were imminent, and noted that the Israeli Air Force had completed preparations for a possible attack on Iran. However, it did not identify the nature of the attack. Israeli Chief of Staff Herzi Halevi also stated that they would respond to Iran's airstrikes. In a written statement, Israeli Army stated that Halevi visited the Nevatim base, which was reported to have suffered light damage in the Iranian attack on April the 13th. "We are looking beyond and thinking about our steps, launching of so many missiles, cruise missiles, and UAVs on Israeli territory will be met with a response," Halevi said at Nevatim base. Israel launched an airstrike on Iran's consulate building in Damascus on April the 1st, killing 7 Iranian officials from the Iranian Revolutionary Guards, including 2 generals. Iran had announced that Israel's consulate attack amounted to an attack on its territory and that it would retaliate. Israel, on the other hand, had declared that it would respond to Iran's attack. On April the 13th, Iran launched an attack on Israel with hundreds of unmanned aerial vehicles, ballistic and cruise missiles. Iran announced that some targets were hit, while Israel said that most of the attacks were intercepted by air defense systems. But a missile hit a military base in the south. Iranian Foreign Minister Hussein Amir Abdullahian said Iran would respond quickly, more forcefully, and more comprehensively to Israel's likely attack. The semi-official Tasnim news agency stated that Minister Abdullahian spoke by phone with British Foreign Secretary David Cameron. Abdullahian told his counterpart that Iran's weekend attack on Israel was carried out in self-defense, adding that Israel's destructive policies are at the root of the crises in the region. Criticizing the UK's support for Israel's attack on Gaza, in which tens of thousands of civilians were killed, Abdullahian said, "While hundreds of thousands of tons of bombs have been dropped on the oppressed people of Gaza in the last 6 months, it is surprising that the UK is concerned about Iran's response to the Israeli regime's barbaric attack on diplomatic sites in self-defense in accordance with Article 51 of the UN Charter." On Tel Aviv's likely attack on Iranian territory, the Iranian foreign minister said that Iran does not want escalation of tensions in the region. But if the Israeli regime seeks adventure, their next response will be swift, more forceful, and comprehensive. Spokesperson for Iran's Supreme National Security Council, Abul Faiz Amui, said that they will use weapons they have never used before if Israel attacks his country. While speaking to Al Maidin News, an Iran-aligned Lebanese news outlet, Abul Faiz Amui said they will confront any Israeli aggression and respond to it, are ready to use weapons that they have not used before, and have plans for all scenarios, and call on Israel to act rationally. Israel launched an airstrike on Iran's consulate building in Damascus on April the 1st, killing 7 Iranian officials from the Iranian Revolutionary Guards, including 2 generals. Iran had announced that Israel's consulate attack amounted to an attack on its territory and that it would retaliate. Israel, on the other hand, had declared that it would respond to Iran's attack. On April the 13th, Iran launched an attack on Israel with hundreds of unmanned aerial vehicles, ballistic and cruise missiles. Iran announced that some targets were hit, while Israel said that most of the attacks were intercepted by air defense systems, but a missile hit a military base in the south. Israel state television Kan 11 announced that a limited attack on Iran is being planned, which will allow it to control the situation, which it cannot respond to and which will not drag the region into a full-scale war. According to reports, Ukraine is considering the possibility of destroying the Crimean Bridge with heavy bombardment in July. The bridge serves as the only connection between the annexed Crimea and Russia. British newspaper The Sun reported that the Ukrainian armed forces are planning to demolish the Crimean Bridge using Storm Shadow missiles, unmanned marine vehicles, and F-16 aircraft. The Sun wrote that the intention behind this plan is to showcase to the West Kiev's capability to strike, target, and conduct offensive operations, adding that Ukraine will try to demolish the bridge within 100 days, which they consider their top priority for the country's armed forces. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky had previously said in July that they would continue efforts to disable the bridge, highlighting its significance as the main route for the shipment of weapons to Crimea. Zelensky also emphasized Ukraine's legal and moral rights to dismantle the Crimean bridge and reiterated the country's determination to exercise these rights. The potential destruction of the Crimean Bridge could escalate tensions between Ukraine and Russia, as it symbolizes a strategic link between the annexed Crimea and the Russian mainland. Turkey's first indigenous high-resolution Earth observation satellite, IMEJ, completed its first year in space, Industry and Technology Minister Mehmet Fatih Kacar said Monday. Kacar wrote on X that IMEJ, which was developed by the Tübitak Space Technologies Research Institute and launched into space on April the 15th, 2023, has executed its mission successfully. He noted that all of IMEJ's key components are indigenous, including its electro-optic camera, which has a high resolution from approximately 700 kilometers, that is 435 miles. With IMEJ's satellite's mission, Turkey has proved its ability in space technologies. We will send Turkey's first national communication satellite, TurkSat 6A, into space in the week of July the 8th. This will make us one of the 11 countries that can develop its own communications satellite in the world, he added. And that was the news brought to by the Voice of Turkey's English language transmission broadcasting from Ankara. Now the Voice of Turkey presents the review of the Turkish press. Vatan reports that President Recep Tayyip Erdogan spoke to Qatari Emir Tamim bin Hamad Al Thani on the phone. The two leaders talked about Turkey-Qatar relations, matters of regional concern, and Israeli attacks on Gaza. Hürriyet says that Turkish Foreign Minister Hakan Fidan had a phone conversation with UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres. Fidan and Guterres discussed the latest developments in the region, the situation in Gaza, the Cyprus dispute, and maritime security in the Black Sea. In Şafak headlines, CIA director calls Turkish intelligence chief after Iran-Israel crisis breaks out. The Daily reports that National Intelligence Agency MIT Director Ibrahim Kalın and CIA Director William Burns had an exchange of views regarding Gaza ceasefire negotiations. Burns called MIT Director Kalın during Eid al-Fitr and asked him to act as a mediator in the wake of Iran's attack on Israel. Later on, Kalın spoke to Hamas political bureau chief Ismail Haniyeh over the phone, and the two leaders touched on a variety of issues such as the ceasefire negotiations, the delivery of humanitarian aid, the exchange of hostages and prisoners, and the return of Palestinians in Gaza. Sabah reports that with 1,412 flights operated during April the 1st and 7th, Istanbul Airport became Europe's busiest airport in the said period. Star quotes Pakistan's permanent representative to the United Nations, Munir Akram, as having said that Pakistan-Turkey partnership is crucial for Europe, the Middle East, and Asia at a time of global uncertainty and instability. And that was the review of the Turkish press, brought to you by the Voice of Turkey, broadcasting from Ankara.
Why? Hello, dear listeners, and welcome to this week's edition of our program, That's Why, where we will delve into why an hour consists of 60 minutes. Have you ever pondered why it's 60 and not 100 or 20 minutes in an hour? Similarly, why is a day comprised of 24 hours? The rotation of our planet around its axis constitutes a day, while its orbit around the Sun, as you know, marks a year. Although these units remain constant within our galaxy, they vary for each planet. For instance, Jupiter completes its orbit around the Sun in approximately 4,333 Earth days. The concepts of day and year are indeed cosmological phenomena independent of human consciousness. But what about months, weeks, and hours? These units of time are inventions of human civilization. With the advent of agriculture, humankind transitioned to a settled life, making it easier to fulfill basic needs such as food, drink, and shelter. In ancient times, people living in Mesopotamia and Egypt laid the foundation of today's mathematics. The driven by both daily necessities and sheer curiosity. Approximately 2,300 years ago, in ancient Greece, a significant milestone in time measurement was achieved with the estimation of Earth's circumference. At that time, the widely used sexagesimal counting system developed by the Babylonian civilization led to the division of this estimated result into 60 parts, thus forming what we understand today as circles of latitude, with the calculation of a circle's interior angles as 360 degrees, a year was assigned 360 days, an hour 60 minutes, and a minute 60 seconds. The number 60, divisible without remainders by 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 10, 12, 15, 20, and 30, facilitated calculations immensely. While the metric system and decimal-based measurements dominate modern practices, the division of hours into 60 minutes and minutes into 60 seconds remains a cherished tradition rooted in history. This practice may seem antiquated in the age of digital precision, yet it serves as a poignant reminder of our collective past. From the early civilizations to the present day, humanity's quest to measure and comprehend time has stimulated countless innovations in calendar and clock systems. In the episodes to come, we look forward to exploring the rich tapestry of timekeeping methods developed throughout human history. From sundials to atomic clocks, each advancement reflects our relentless pursuit of precision and accuracy in capturing the passage of time. As we near the conclusion of today's program, let us remember the words of wisdom. An hour consists of 60 minutes because it was the preference of the early scholars contemplating on the division of a day. With this in mind, we are eager to continue our journey through the annals of time in the episodes ahead. Until next week, goodbye.
That's why.
A world of news in 41 languages on trtvotworld.com.
Weekly commentary.
Hello, dear listeners. Welcome to this week's edition of our program, Weekly Commentary. This week's commentary is penned by Mr. Hamza Rifat, who obtained degrees in Peace and Conflict Studies in Islamabad, Pakistan, and in World Affairs and Professional Diplomacy from the Bandaranaike Diplomatic Training Institute in Colombo, Sri Lanka. Hamza was also a South Asian Voices Visiting Fellow at the Stimson Center in Washington, D.C. in 2016. Mr. Hamza Rifat titles his commentary as Smaller South Asian States Deftly Adopt Foreign Policy Amid Regional Strife. And he continues as follows. When it comes to South Asian geopolitics, international attention often centers on China-India tensions or potential conflicts between nuclear-armed Pakistan and India. Smaller states such as Bhutan, Sri Lanka, and Bangladesh also make headlines, but often for domestic developments such as election results, financial difficulties, or economic aspirations. But in 2024, these smaller South Asian states have been working to realign their strategic regional relationships in the presence of powerful India and China. A sign of pragmatism in their respective foreign policies that deserves greater coverage. Each of the three states are pursuing new strategies based on practical considerations which are in line with their own domestic priorities. Sri Lanka, for example, underwent a complete economic meltdown in 2019, which was characterized by a near depletion of its foreign exchange reserves, severe shortage of medical supplies, and soaring prices of basic commodities. The crisis resulted in nationwide protests and the eventual ousting of the Rajapaksa brothers' administration. Under the new president, Ranil Wickremesinghe, however, Colombo last year managed to approve a $2.9 billion bailout package from the International Monetary Fund, which was actively facilitated and backed by India. Yet, Sri Lanka's closer ties with New Delhi or its support for economic revival is not coming at the expense of its relationship with China. This is evident from the remarks of Prime Minister Dinesh Gunawardena, who stated in March that Beijing will assist the island with strategic infrastructure, including its port of Hambantota. China also remains Sri Lanka's biggest bilateral creditor. Sri Lanka's realignment in 2024 with two regional powers marks a notable contrast to previous years under former Prime Minister Mahinda Rajapaksa's government. Rajapaksa was known to sidestep India's concern about the post-Lanka-Tamil Tiger ILM environment in Sri Lanka, which New Delhi alleged was characterized by the administration's heavy-handed approach towards ethnic Sri Lankan Tamils. While relations with India were not tense per se, greater priority was accorded to China in terms of increasing foreign direct investments from Beijing and the development of the port of Hambantota, raising concerns in New Delhi that China was building military bases in close proximity to its shores. While such Chinese investments continue in 2024, an understanding also exists in Sri Lanka that the island should navigate itself shrewdly amid the presence of two major powers in Asia for maximum benefit. The same case is for the tiny kingdom of Bhutan, which is geographically sandwiched between China and India. Following its fourth parliamentary elections in January 2024, Thimphu has adopted a more nuanced approach when reaching out to its neighbors, dealing with both sides despite not having diplomatic relations with China. Border disputes between the two sides dating back to 1930 hasn't prevented Bhutan from kickstarting negotiations with China to resolve tensions, while also acknowledging that Beijing's economic rise can benefit Bhutan financially. Bhutanese Foreign Minister Thanthi Dorji and his Chinese counterpart Wang Yi, for example, spearheaded efforts to diffuse border tensions through planned demarcation of boundaries in 2023. The 25th round of talks between the two sides are the first in 7 years and indicates that Bhutan seeks amicable ties as well as peace with China. While India has been mildly skeptical of rapprochement between Thimphu and Beijing, strong relations between the three sides with a workable peace framework acts in New Delhi's favor. This is because Bhutan has a stake in keeping the peace between the two groups for its own security. This improvement in relations with China benefits Bhutan and helps it hedge itself against potential escalations between Beijing and New Delhi, while maintaining an independent foreign policy anchored in neutrality and a focus on economic integration. Balancing competing interests through realignment and multilateralism serves the kingdom as well as it continues to maintain strong relations with India. As for Bangladesh, the results of the 2024 elections have once again brought Sheikh Hasina Wajid into power. Her administration in Dhaka also seeks to balance its relationships with both China and India. This is despite opposition parties and activists launching an India Out campaign that involves boycotting Indian products over alleged electoral interference from New Delhi to bring the Awami League back into power. Despite criticism of democratic backsliding from people with Dhaka and Western leaders, Beijing and New Delhi have open-heartedly accepted Hasina's legitimacy. In her previous term, the Prime Minister had inaugurated a $1.2 million submarine base in Cox Bazar with Chinese assistance, while her current administration is considering a proposal from China to undertake dredging and embarking on significant sections of Teesta River, which is valued at $1 billion. All of this is taking place as the Hasina government maintains solid relations with India, which she called a great friend of Bangladesh after winning the elections. Nepal is not too different with the arrival of the newly formed government led by a five-party left alliance in 2023. It is newly appointed Deputy Prime Minister and Foreign Minister Narayan Kaji Shrestha went to China on a visit to expand bilateral relations and secure investments. Nepal has had excellent bilateral relations with India and continues to maintain close contacts through official dialogues on initiatives such as Pancheswar Multipurpose Project. This push for realignment and multilateralism from smaller nations in South Asia bodes well for their respective futures, given that each of these states lack the economic clout to assert themselves on the regional and global stage and face significant domestic developmental challenges. It is a wise move from their respective leaderships to adopt foreign policies geared towards multifaceted engagements with both countries. On the global stage, other countries are also adopting a more pragmatic approach. South Africa and Brazil, for example, are seeking meaningful engagement with countries such as Russia and China while partaking in blocs such as BRICS. Meanwhile, they are working to keep from compromising constructive relations with the United States and its allies. It is a positive sign to see that in a region as volatile as South Asia, smaller states are adopting pragmatic foreign policies as regional powers such as China and India vie for influence. This week's commentary was penned by Mr. Hamza Rifat, who obtained degrees in peace and conflict studies in Islamabad, Pakistan. Until next week, goodbye.
Weekly Commentary.
Hoş geldin. Bugün dağların dumanı aralandı. Hoş geldin. Ha, ışıklar içinde kaldım. Yandım efendim. Ha, ışıklar içinde kaldım. Yandım efendim. Sen bana yangın ol efendim, ben sana rüzgar. Tutuşsun gün yansın geceler zamanımızda. Sen bana geç geldin, ben sana erken. Tutuşsun gün yansın geceler vaktimiz varken. Thank you.
sefa geldin, hoş geldin. Bugün güllerden güzelim, sefa geldin, hoş geldin. Ah bu yağmur yalnızmış, dindim efendim. Ah bu yağmur yalnızmış, dindim efendim. Sen bana yangın ol efendim, ben sana rüzgar. Tut uçsun gün, yansın geceler, zamanımızda. Sen bana geç kaldın, ben sana erken. Soyunsun gün, sarsın geceler, vaktimiz varken. Sen bana geç kaldın, ben sana erken. Tutuşsun gün, yansın geceler, vaktimiz varken.
All around the world, every hour of the day, TRT Voice of Türkiye is with you.
Türkiye's Geomarked Products. Apaz cheese of Sakarya. Apaz cheese, named after the Apaz people of the Caucasus region who migrated to the city of Sakarya on the Black Sea coast of Turkey centuries ago, was included among Turkey's geographically registered products upon the application of the Sakarya Chamber of Commerce and Industry in 2021. This cheese, also called Abaza cheese, has a fibrous structure, amber yellow color, and is usually knitted. Cheese can stretch in hot water thanks to its fibrous structure. The most important feature that distinguishes Apaz cheese from other cheese types is that after the boiled milk reaches 40 degrees Celsius, a very small amount of yogurt is added to it, and then natural rennet is also added after it has cooled for a while. The milk is left for 1.5 hours for the fermentation process. Then the resulting mixture is cut with a knife. The cut pieces are slowly shredded with a hand mixer. The mixture, which releases its water for a while, is boiled with heated whey for about 30 minutes. Then, a mold of appropriate size is selected and the top of the mold is wrapped with a clean cloth. Hot pieces of cheese are placed into the mold and allowed to release its water again. Pressure is applied and then the cheese mass is taken out of the container and is cut into palm-sized pieces with a knife. Shredded cheese is boiled for another hour. The boiled cheese pieces begin to soften and they become stretchy and malleable. After boiling, dried herbs, especially black cumin and thyme, can be added to the cheese. After the cooled cheese pieces are thoroughly salted using coarse salt, they are wrapped in wax paper, placed in a jar without being compressed, and then closed. After being kept at low temperatures for 2 months, Apazian cheese begins to turn amber in color, matures well, and becomes ready to take its place on the breakfast table.
Music.
Türkiye's Geomarkt products.
Voice of Türkiye, always by your side.
have been listening to the Voice of Turkey's English language transmission broadcasting from Ankara in the 16-meter band between 12:30 UTC and 1762 kHz to Europe. You can listen to us over the Turkcell 3A and 4A satellites and on the internet at www.trtdinle.com through radio's link and under the Voice of Turkey Radio's expandable section. Our email address is englishdesk@trt.net.tr. Thank you for listening to the Voice of Turkey and goodbye.
Radio La Voce della Turchia. 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 ile radyo La Voce della Türkiye.